Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it.
Well, that was the then 12-year-old Severin Suzuki addressing the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, which at the time was the largest ever gathering of world leaders and spawned the treaty that now underpins the COP Climate Summit, the 30th edition of which gets underway in Belém in Brazil today. But as negotiators enter the 30th edition of COP, what have climate negotiations actually achieved since that Rio Earth Summit back in 1992? Are we on a better track than we were 33 years ago? Well, Saif O'Neill is the project lead for Feminist Communities for Climate Justice, a joint initiative of the National Women's Council of Ireland and Community Work Ireland. And Saif joins us now to look at the progress made in the previous COPs. Saif, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
So, progress or not?
Well, despite the fact, the undeniable fact that climate breakdown is happening all around us, we've just seen, for example, in the last week, a number of severe storms in the Caribbean and now in the Philippines that are putting people's lives at risk and destroying homes and property. And all of these storms and extreme weather events are going to become more and more common. A certain amount of global heating and climate change is definitely baked in, and the current trajectories suggest that we might hit 2.5 to 3 degrees of warming by the end of the century, which would be absolutely catastrophic. However, the global process for dealing with this, the COP, if you like, has actually achieved a fair bit. If you think back over 30 years, it's achieved the Paris Agreement in 2015. There was a climate finance deal belatedly agreed in 2023. And of course, we've seen the rollout of renewables accelerating in recent years to the extent that renewable deployment is really meeting all of the extra additional energy demand and all the new electricity capacity globally. So there is, you know, a lot to be optimistic about on the electrotech side of things. Where we're not doing well is on the nature side of things. We are seeing globally coral reefs in severe decline. And of course, there's a risk that some of the most important tropical forests are losing their ability to draw down carbon from the atmosphere. And that is going to accelerate warming. So as we approach certain key Earth system tipping points, the challenge of responding to climate change becomes more and more urgent, but we have less time in which to make an effective response. So that's, I suppose, the picture is kind of good and bad. Politics is what it is. It's slow. It's consensual. Mm-hmm. And it requires the buy-in of states who have many different interests and amounts of power in the global system.
Now,
so
looking,
it's not an equal playfield.
Looking at some of the measurables, renewables outpace coal for the first time in 2025, which is good. And also, when you look at what the Chinese are doing, now they're still running massive coal-fired power stations, so it's not as if they're gone completely renewable. But there is a huge push in that massive economy towards renewables, and they want to be the world leaders. They want to leave the burn, baby, burn United States behind, so that when the world has to use renewables, China will be the dominant force.
Yes, in terms of generating the capacity for producing renewables. So in order to have solar panels, in order to have wind turbines, they have to be manufactured. And the scaling up of the manufacturing in China has been absolutely, you know, incredible in the last decade. I can't even quote you the statistics, but it is phenomenal. So they are the market leaders. And because of the capacity that they have brought into the manufacturing, they have brought down the cost of solar panels by about 95% in a very short period of time. So in terms of the pace of this technology deploying and displacing fossil fuels, it has been very successful. The only problem is that the incumbent fossil fuel industries are clinging on tight. And of course, you have that political backsliding from the United States, which doesn't help. And of course, their allies, essentially, the tech petrol states in the Middle East, very much resisting at every COP any attempt to highlight the need for phasing out fossil fuels. So this has to be the key thing. You know, we're not going to get anywhere by just adding more solar panels. What will really matter is if there is a global agreement to phase out fossil fuels, whether that's through a new treaty or through some mechanism under the existing United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. But I don't think that's going to happen at this COP. There doesn't seem to be political momentum behind that at this COP.
Now, we, when we were growing up, were always conditioned to regard the United States as the good guy. I mean, they may have done things that we found a bit reprehensible, you know, who really wanted the Vietnam War and so on. And there was lots of things that the United States got involved in, including the invasions of Iraq. But generally speaking, United States was seen, comparatively speaking, to be on the side of the angels. But now, they seem to be wrong on pretty much every front. I was reading there that over 100 nations were poised to approve a historic deal to slash the pollution from cargo ships. And then the United States State Department and Marco Rubio get involved, and they try to bully nations into withdrawing their support for that initiative. And those cargo ships are massive polluters.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Yes, it is absolutely disgraceful. And, you know, that agreement was in the works for 10 years and they were very close to agreeing it. And it was expected to be a simple case of approving it when the Trump administration basically jettisoned the whole thing. And it's a very depressing maneuver because there really is no alternative. You know, in some senses, you do need the big powers to be involved in these agreements. It's very difficult for other states to proceed without them, especially in a UN system where there is a veto effectively for any one nation state. So a huge amount of bargaining and trading had been done in the lead up to that. And but I think, you know, I've attended a number of COPs and I've also been at a number of the post-Rio conferences back in the 1990s. And I remember how the US delegation would use its influence. And, you know, while they certainly weren't trying to trash or disrupt global negotiations, they had always a very particular agenda, which was America first. So Trump is not the first president to push for that. They had a longstanding commitment to market-based mechanisms over forms of regulation. And that was to protect American interests as well. And they resisted many of the initiatives that would have really made a difference and put a dent in global emissions. Now, I remember as well back when Obama, President Obama, was in power, he negotiated a very historic agreement with China. So in 2015, before the Paris Agreement was signed, he entered into this bilateral treaty with China, where China would agree to peak its emissions. And the United States committed to some, at the time, quite ambitious emission reductions. And that was an example of where the United States would do these bilateral moves rather than participating in the multilateral process. So their influence has been sometimes good, sometimes critical. But often very self-interested.
Yeah, reading those reports of what the State Department and the Americans got up to, one ambassador from Asia was told if he voted in favor of this plan for reduction of emissions from cargo ships, that his country's sailors would not be allowed to disembark at American ports. Caribbean diplomats were told they would be blacklisted from entering the United States. And Marco Rubio himself personally called officials in different countries to threaten financial penalties and other punishments if they continued to support the agreement to cut this pollution from cargo ships. In other words, they got down and dirty. I mean, it was reprehensible stuff. And they admit that they did this. I mean, they don't admit the individual threats and so on, but they say that it's American policy to kill this deal because it would hurt America.
It's really shocking. It's really shocking stuff. So they're not just a global superpower, but a super bully. And they're using that power to disrupt and to protect their friends in various industries. And it's really deeply shocking. So what can we do? Well, diplomats around the world must have been in shock after that particular treaty collapse. But they get back to work. So we need a strong European Union commitment to that 2040 target that was agreed with lots of dodgy flexibilities and loopholes. But when the EU is strong, it also has a considerable weight in these treaty negotiations. It uses a lot of its soft power. But by, you know, whittling back on climate finance, by failing to deliver the increased climate finance that was promised many years ago, I think we lose credibility internationally with developing countries. And what's needed is a kind of an alliance between progressive climate action countries in the global north in support of the developing countries. And then you're looking at a kind of significant majority, at least in the General Assembly of the United Nations, that can hopefully push things onwards. But we're going to have to look at new mechanisms, new voting systems in these treaty negotiations so that states like the US can't exercise a veto, and other forms of regulation so that states can take their own action without being penalized by the WTO.
But isn't the problem that we have in the presidency of the United States, and it's the president and the people he has surrounded himself with? I mean, Marco Rubio used to be regarded as someone who was the adult in the room. He's proven himself to be a craven Trumpite, so he's just doing his master's bidding. When you've got someone who will react to Canada, one province running an ad featuring the voice of Ronald Reagan, not fake, but actual Ronald Reagan talking about tariffs, and then in a mercurial way, Trump gets annoyed at this fairly minor thing and decides to slap tariffs on a whole country. I mean, when you're dealing with someone like this, it's, I don't know what you can do about having an idiot in power.
I share your sense of despair. But the thing is, what we can do is stop using fossil fuels, because once we are importing fossil fuels, we become dependent on those kind of irrational and very dangerous global sort of centers of power. We are in hock to petrostates. We're in hock to countries like Russia and other countries that are illegally waging war on other countries. And we're importing the likes in Europe of natural gas, which is coming from fracking, which is doing incredible amounts of environmental damage and leaking methane into the atmosphere. So the fastest way that we can relieve ourselves of the tyrannical behavior of these superpowers is to actually get off fossil fuels as fast as possible. And that's what we can do in Ireland. And, you know, we have the capacity and we have the resources to do that. But it is really going to require a new type of political consensus that's not just about talking down environmentalists who object to things using judicial review, but a new type of social consensus that aims to make climate action happen fast, but in a way that benefits everybody and doesn't leave anyone behind. Because at the moment, there's a growing upwelling of kind of concern that climate policies are going to disadvantage people in certain ways. And we absolutely must act to make sure that, you know, the communities, both here and in developing countries, benefit. The ones who have the least capacity to adapt and to prepare can benefit from climate policies. And that is very challenging. And I don't underestimate it, even though we have a lot of climate policies in place. Some of them are being delayed by prevarication, by incoherence, and by still a demand in government policy for, you know, and a support for data centers and economic growth that we can't provide the infrastructure to support. So,
it's
a challenge.
Saeb, thank you very much for joining us. That's Saeb O'Neill, Project Lead for Feminist Communities for Climate Justice, which is a joint initiative of the National Women's Council of Ireland and Community Work Ireland. Saeb, thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.